With the election right around the corner and our ever-expanding network of podcasts, including our most recent edition, Scylla Consciousness, there's never been a better time to become a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, and enhanced show notes for select shows. Our goal is to make the DSR Network membership accessible to everyone, so for the month of May, enjoy 60% off the normal monthly or annual price for the first month or first year. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code MAYDAY, one word, at checkout. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code MAYDAY. Thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent.
Donald Trump is currently embroiled in the fourth week of his hush money trial in Manhattan, where he faces 34 felony counts related to a criminal scheme designed to unlawfully influence the 2016 election. On Friday, former Trump aide and trusted confidant Hope Hicks testified, and by many accounts, she badly undermined the defenses that Trump's legal team will be attempting to mount. We think there are all kinds of ways this trial could get worse for Trump. One is that there are strong indications from Monday's testimony that the payments will get tied even more tightly to Trump going forward. Another is that Trump was again held in contempt of court for attacking jurors and threatened with jail, and Trump doesn't have a lot of self-control, so more of that is surely coming. Here to help us unravel all of this is Kim Whaley, a professor of law and former assistant U.S. attorney who has a new piece for The Bulwark on why Hope Hicks' testimony matters. Welcome, Kim.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
First, let's talk about why Hicks' testimony on Friday was so important. Trump is charged with falsifying business records involving his fixer, Michael Cohen's $130,000 payoff to Stormy Daniels to keep quiet about her and Trump's affair heading into the 2016 election. Hicks confirmed on Friday that the payments were very much timed to concerns about the campaign and that Trump was aware of the payments. Can you walk us through what she said and why it matters so much?
Well, I think she said things that the jury could draw the conclusion you just articulated from. So she basically talked about the Access Hollywood tape and how that was stunning and shocking. She said there was, you know, a hurricane that was literally hitting the United States at the time, but it was drowned out by the news of the Access Hollywood tape, which people will remember was where Donald Trump early in October was caught on a hot mic bragging to reporters about sexually assaulting women. And she was, you know, a stone's throw from Donald Trump, talked to him every single day and said, we were really worried about how this news could affect the campaign. They were losing Republican support and were in a real sort of tizzy about what to do about it. Then just weeks later came the Stormy Daniels hush money payoff. So the timing is really critical to the government's case. So she established that that timing does matter. And then she talked about a conversation she had with Donald Trump. It was 2 years later when he was in the White House, and it was about the Stormy Daniels hush money payoff. And she raised it with him because it had been broken by the Washington Post. And he said that it was all Michael Cohen's idea, that he had really nothing to do with it, that Trump had nothing to do with it. And when asked about Michael Cohen's credibility, or do you believe that he would just out of the goodness of his heart, I'm paraphrasing, do that, she said, no, I don't know Michael Cohen to be that way. So she sort of suggested that she didn't believe Donald Trump's articulation of the background behind the payment in the moment. So I think that's going to help later shore up Cohen's credibility when we know one of the main defenses is to try to shred him as a perjurer and just make the jury cross him off as just a liar. And now we have Hope Hicks, who by all accounts from reporters that were in the room came across as extremely credible and believable, soft-spoken, didn't clearly want to be there, was there under a subpoena. Then she was asked about, you know, follow-up, and I'm going to quote directly, she said, quote, "I think Mr. Trump's opinion was that it was better to be dealing with it now," it meaning the payoff, the hush money payoff, "and it would have been bad to have had that story coming out before the election."
Right. And by the way, critically, this is again in 2018. He's saying it's better that it came out now in 2018 than before the election. And by the way, I mean, it's sort of comical to think that Michael Cohen, of all people, would have just volunteered to hand all this money to Stormy Daniels without some sort of arrangement with Trump beforehand. And on that score, one of the key events today, that is Monday when we're recording this, was that prosecutors walked Deborah Tarasoff, a bookkeeper at the Trump Organization, through all the checks she cut to Michael Cohen. Many were drawn from Trump's personal account, correct? I mean, she was told to identify the payments as a, quote, legal expense. Do I have that right? Can you talk about all that? What else mattered about Tarasoff's testimony? Where do you see it going?
Right. So they're sort of establishing the chain of custody for these checks. The comptroller testified that you know, he was involved. She got an email from the comptroller saying, cut the check. She was the check cutter. And just to be clear, she still works for the Trump Organization. She is being, her legal fees are being paid for by the Trump Organization. So that establishes her credibility. And she said they were made in, I think, there were 11 different checks cut at $35,000 a piece. And there are two pots of money they came from. One was the Trump Organization, and one was Donald Trump's personal account. So the first chunk of them came from the Trump Organization, and she testified that any amounts over $10,000 had to have two signatures on them, and they would be Donald Trump, Alan Weisselberg, or Eric Trump. Two of the three had to sign those. And for the $35,000 checks that were FedEx to the White House for Donald Trump's personal signature, she was asked, well, in your experience, does he just robotically sign checks? And she said, no. If he doesn't want to sign a check, he takes his Sharpie and writes void on it, and he won't do it. So she suggested anyway that Donald Trump is not just, you know, this high up in this big organization doing what he's told from the minions. And that's one of the defenses, that, listen, this was all orchestrated by Weisselberg and or Cohen or all the people below Donald Trump. He just signed what was put in front of him. And she, I think, refuted that, made it pretty clear. No, Donald Trump knows what he's doing. And as listeners might not understand, this is not a sprawling organization with many, many levels. It was two floors in a office building. They were pretty close. They worked tightly together. And Donald Trump, before he went to the White House, you know, was in day-to-day contact with these folks all the time.
I think what you're saying here is that Hicks kind of preemptively demolished what's going to be an effort by Trump's defense team to discredit Michael Cohen, right? The idea that Cohen voluntarily did these hush money payments without Trump's knowledge. It's very hard to see how both those sets of checks from each of the two pools that you just laid out there could have happened without Trump's knowledge, isn't it?
Yeah, I think she did that. She established Trump at some point knew about the Stormy Daniels payout. So it's not like, oh, gosh, I didn't even know. All I know is I pay legal fees. He knew about Stormy Daniels at some point. He told her that he knew enough to say, oh, I didn't do it. It was Michael Cohen. She established at the time she didn't believe Donald Trump. And then she established that at least 2 years later, he had the intent to cover that up. Or he thought it was a good idea, if you're going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Oh, whoosh. So good thing that Michael Cohen paid her off prior to the election, not after the election. And again, not about legal fees. So I do think, given how credible she is, listeners might know that at some point she broke down on the stand. She had just finished her direct testimony talking about that conversation with Donald Trump about the Stormy Daniels payoff. There was one question on cross-examination, and she broke down in tears, and the judge had to call a recess. So the timing of her crying, I think, is something the jurors are going to wonder about. Why then? And was she upset because of, you know, Donald Trump was sitting there and she still is fond of him? Or did she part of her know that she had just said some things that were not good for him, good for his case? And frankly, we all know what happens to people who are disloyal to Donald Trump. You know, she has not spoken to any reporters since she left the White House. It's been on lockdown, and she's only there again because she has to, pursuant to a criminal trial subpoena.
I think one thing we're seeing confirmed again here is that when people around Trump kind of break from the cult and treat the rule of law as paramount to Trump, as mattering more than Trump, things start to go badly for him and his designs get frustrated. I mean, we saw Mike Pence refusing to carry out his January 6th scheme. That's a big example. Georgia election officials rebuffed Trump's efforts to corrupt them into finding votes. Republicans who testified to the January 6th committee did so with really great heroism, I think. And here again, Hope Hicks is treating her responsibilities seriously. Isn't that sort of the story, the through line with a lot of this stuff?
It says a lot that she is, you know, taking it seriously. I mean, keep in mind, Jeffrey McConney, the comptroller for the Trump Organization, he was found guilty of fraud in the civil fraud trial. And in the decision, Judge Erdogan, in that civil case, said that he was not credible because he sort of waffled and wavered on his articulation of what happened when he was working on the books for 20 years for the Trump Organization. And Alan Weisselberg, the CFO, is in prison for perjuring himself relating to his testimony in regard to Donald Trump and the Trump Organization. So I think you're right, Greg. It's, you know, it's either you lose your law license. We've seen, you know, many lawyers get in trouble with the bar, or multiple Donald Trump lawyers are now under indictment in various places in the United States. Or we have, you know, this perjury finding of Weisselberg, or, you know, he goes after them publicly.
It's really an amazing thing. And I mean, in a way, Michael Cohen also kind of confirms the pattern in a bit of a twisted way, right? I mean, this is a guy who, I believe he said this to Congress, though it may have been in an interview. He said that when you were around Trump...
It was Congress, right?
He said that when he was around Trump, you really feel like you're part of something larger, right? Nobody was more bought into the cult of Trump than Michael Cohen was. And then he went to jail, too. And now that he, you know, who knows what his actual motives are, but he seems to be following what the rule of law requires for whatever reason. And that's going to, I think, get worse, right? I mean, the testimony from the bookkeeper who talked about the two pools that the checks were drawn from and really incriminated Trump pretty badly, I think, doesn't that suggest that we're going to be seeing worse from both Michael Cohen and others, and other confirmation that really ties these payments more tightly to Trump? What do you see happening on that front?
Well, you just identified something really critical, I think, about Michael Cohen. And what I was referencing was perjury. He perjured himself to the United States Congress.
Right.
And I think with Michael Cohen, there's a before and after. There's the before when he was being loyal, like Weisselberg, like McConney. And that's what the defense is going to cross-examine him on his perjury, right? And the prosecution is going to try to establish, listen, he's now come clean. That, yeah, when he was being loyal, like other people, he perjured himself, he did some shady things, he lied. That's, I think the idea is that's what is the what you got to do to stay within Trump's close orbit. And they're going to try to establish, listen, now is when he's actually telling the truth. The fact that the story is different now is all the more reason to believe him. And look at Hope Hicks. She's always been truthful. And she's now giving a version of events that's consistent with the new Michael Cohen. And just also to be clear, Michael Cohen went to jail for precisely the election fraud that is the election fraud that is part of this particular case. This particular case, the primary claim is falsification of business records. That's a misdemeanor under New York law. What makes it a felony is it was done to cover up a hush money payment that was designed to dupe electors. That his Michael Cohen's engagement in the hush money scheme, he pled guilty, he didn't go to trial, but he has served time for doing precisely what Donald Trump is now on trial for, to arguably to a lesser degree, because Michael Cohen, his was a federal case. Donald Trump's out there every day after court saying, oh, every legal expert on the planet thinks this is a ridiculous case. Michael Cohen might have a different point of view, given that his liberty was taken away for having been loyal to Donald Trump at the time, effectively, or at least that would be his story.
Hey, everybody, some big news from the New Republic. TNR's Stop Trump Summit is making a stop in Philadelphia, the birthplace of American democracy. You know, that thing you cherish that Trump and the MAGA movement are determined to burn to the ground. The Stop Trump Summit focuses on how America got to this dangerous place, how Trump could use the government against its own people should he be reelected, and what laws and politics are at stake. The Stop Trump Summit will be held live at the Liberty View at Independence Visitor Center in Philadelphia on Saturday, May 18th from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Among the featured speakers are Mary Trump, Rick Wilson, co-founder of the Lincoln Project, Molly Jong Fast, host of the popular Fast Politics podcast, as well as Will Bunch, national opinion columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, David Cohen, professor at Drexel Klein School of Law, and PA State Senator Vincent Hughes, plus many others. It's an event you won't want to miss. It will be nothing if not cathartic, and it may even inspire you to action. For tickets, go to tnr.com/events. This threat to America's democracy and the future of our country must be stopped. Joining TNR at the Stop Trump Summit in Philly is a great place to start. Right, and by the way, I think that weighs on jurors as well. And also, I think it's worth noting that Americans are really suckers for a redemption narrative. You know what I mean? They love redemption, stories of redemption. And Michael Cohen can kind of play on those heartstrings a little bit, maybe. I think maybe his story gets perceived as, look, this guy was on the dark side. And by the way, you know, this all reflects badly on Trump, right? That the dark side was when Michael Cohen was doing what Trump wanted him to do.
Exactly.
So, right. And so what do you envision coming out specifically in the future about that ties these payments more tightly to Trump? Again, we had this testimony from the bookkeeper that strongly suggests the evidence is powerful on that front. What more could we see on that? What other bombshells could we see on that? And also on Trump knowingly greenlighting this scheme for the purpose of deceiving the American people in the election. What could come?
Well, one thing to keep in mind is from people that were reporters that were inside the courtroom today said that the jurors were very, very interested in the technical paper trail, that many of them were taking notes, which suggests that it's almost like, you know, they have the Christmas tree and they're figuring out where the ornaments are going to go. Like they might be for themselves making a timeline and trying to piece this together. There was the affair, there was Access Hollywood, there was the hush money payment, there was the cover up through the financial records. There's already been, I think, a cell phone audio presented to the jury of a conversation with Donald Trump and Michael Cohen. I think which is establishing, in real time with an audio tape that they had conversations. I think that the key is Michael Cohen testifying about what his conversations were with Donald Trump, and essentially taking that timeline that the government's already established that I just explained, and putting Donald Trump on the timeline with Michael Cohen. The conversations with Alan Weisselberg and Michael Cohen, the conversations with David Pecker from the National Enquirer, we've already heard from him. He dealt with Michael Cohen. The government wants to establish Michael Cohen was doing the bidding of Donald Trump. The defense wants to establish Michael Cohen and Alan Weisselberg were doing their own thing. So basically they're setting up all of this other kind of corroborating evidence, very credible witnesses like Hope Hicks, like the bookkeeper, documentary evidence, audio tapes, a paper trail. They're setting all of that up. Then they're going to bring in Michael Cohen to connect all the dots. And the jury will have to say, well, is he lying if we know from these other pieces of evidence pretty much the same thing?
Absolutely. And so that's one very clear way that what we've seen today and on Friday points to more bombshells to come. Another is that on Monday, Trump was held in contempt of court again for attacking jurors. He was threatened with jail. He is going to almost certainly violate the gag order again. This is not someone who can control himself. He thinks he's absolutely in the right for disparaging the system in every way he can conceivably come up with. What do you anticipate on that?
Well, I agree with you that I think this is train has left the station in terms of potentially putting Donald Trump in prison, in jail for contempt of court. And I say that for two reasons. One is the judge has warned him not once, but twice. And just like any kind of human behavior, if you don't follow up a threat with actual action, your credibility is completely lost. And Judge Merchan is not just worrying about his own credibility, but the credibility of the judicial system, the rule of law, the court system that Donald Trump is out attacking and that a lot of Americans don't really understand operates differently from politics, right? That's getting blurred. And so we have nine last week. We have another one this time. This time it was about the jurors and suggesting that somehow they're all Democrats. That is very treacherous waters for Donald Trump to be going specifically after jurors. And I can't emphasize this enough. We've seen Donald Trump destroy lives through attacking people on his Truth Social. And I mean, particular Shea Moss and Ruby Freeman, the two election workers. Rudy Giuliani had a multi-$100 million judgment for going after them. And Donald Trump wasn't part of that lawsuit, but he did it as well. And this judge has to understand he's got millions of followers, Donald Trump, and some of them are willing to engage in violence. We saw that on January 6th. So that's extremely important for the judge to draw the line there. Yeah. The judge also said to his lawyer, Todd Blanche, listen, you know, you're losing credibility with the court. I think that was also a message to the lawyer, control your client. And he wasn't able to do it. So, but, you know, here's my question, Greg. This is more for a political pundit than a legal pundit. Is remanding Donald Trump to jail good for Donald Trump politically or not?
Yeah, I think he probably is playing for it maybe to raise money because they have a lot of problems on that front. But I just don't see this resonating with the center of the country in the way that Trump thinks it does. He often just confuses what resonates with the MAGA base with what appeals to the center. And on that, just to wrap things up, I want to go big picture. Andrew Weissman said something that resonated with me. Trump is actually getting very good representation from his lawyers in this case, and that's a good thing. The system requires good defense work to function, right? But many less privileged defendants don't get anything like adequate representation. And given this, there's something so deeply perverse about Trump attacking the jurors and the judge and the proceedings as illegitimate. I mean, this is a guy who's had the most pricey help in gaming the system, in exploiting its loopholes and pitfalls in every conceivable way to avoid accountability of maybe anyone alive. Yet he has the gall to treat the system as illegitimately unfair to him and, as you say, make life hell for people who are simply trying to make the system function. It's really outrageous. I mean, I think that's how the center of the country perceives this. What do you think?
I agree with the notion that he has the best representation, right? Todd Blanche is excellent by all accounts, as far as I understand. And he's paying for it through his campaign, a lot of his legal fees. So it's not like regular people having to come up with money for lawyers. And
right.
just to be clear, you know, if you're a low-income person and you can't make bail, you serve your prison sentence before there's been a single day of trial, before the government has to put a single piece of evidence. People run around talking about innocent until proven guilty, unless you're poor in America. If you're poor, you're guilty, and you serve time even just because you cannot afford the bail or a really good lawyer. The criminal defense bar that is paid for by the government is thin in many areas of the country. You don't get representation free at all stages of the criminal process. It depends on the state. So he is no victim, no violins here for Donald Trump. Let's also be clear, Greg, he's also getting from the United States Supreme Court potentially immunity that has never existed in the history of the United States. But what's happened on January 6th, the horror of that, attempting to violently steal an election from the voters and to basically, you know, take the White House illegitimately, that is giving the Supreme Court occasion to manufacture immunity for Donald Trump and future presidents. So nobody else gets that in America or on the planet. And he had more power in that moment than anyone on the planet. He should have more accountability, not less accountability. So it's really too bad. And I'll just say, from a personal standpoint, you know, I teach law students. I've been teaching for many, many years. I teach civil procedure. I teach constitutional law. I teach federal courts about the separation of powers. And since the Trump years, I have had to take time in class to explain to my students that it is not a legitimate option for lawyers to flout the law. I used to say you can be a tough as nails lawyer and really, you know, make it your opponent's life hell. You can be Atticus Finch from To Kill a Mockingbird and have tremendous integrity and be the lawyer everybody trusts and judges trust, and that's how you win. But now I have to say, you can't just ignore the law. And they come into the classroom thinking aggressive lawyering, right? You have to be a zealous advocate. Zealous advocacy does not include flouting the system and being held in contempt and violating the various rules requiring that you stay within the facts and the law. And I think it's done a tremendous disservice to our system of justice that Donald Trump is getting away with these outrageous talking points. He's a big baby, frankly. And there are thousands and thousands of people. There are people on death row that are innocent that don't get any break on appeal or under our habeas corpus system, under the Supreme Court rulings. If you're convicted by a jury and you're innocent and you find later there's evidence that shows that you are actually innocent, you could still go to the death chamber in America. So the inequity of it is really, I know I'm on my soapbox, but the inequity of it is really stunning.
It's infuriating. And by the way, I just want to add on your point about lawyers not being allowed to break the law for their clients. That is what Trump wants. When he says he wants a Roy Cohn, that's exactly what he means. He is essentially saying, I'm pissed at my lawyers because they're not willing to treat the system as illegitimate on my behalf. I'm really hopeful that justice is coming. Who knows? We'll see. But anyway, for now, Kim, thanks so much for talking to us. This was a really fantastic discussion.
It was great to be with you.
All, we have some good content for you up at TNR.com. Michael S. Roth, the president of Wesleyan University, explains why he's not calling the police on his campus's pro-Palestinian encampment. And Walter Shapiro lays out why President Biden's awful approval rating ultimately might not matter in the election. We'll see you all tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.